This is the Nomad Futurist Podcast, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and transformation. Connect with us, share your thoughts with us at nomadfuturist.com. Let's get this started. Here are Phil and Nabil.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Nomad Futurist. This is your co-host Nabil Mahmood from Kailua Kona, Hawaii.
This is your co-host Philip Koblenz from Montclair, New Jersey.
And this is Kevin Mboding. I'm from San Jose, California. Thanks for having me, guys.
Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. It's been way, way, way overdue. So before we get started, I would like for our audience to get to know you a little bit. So could you tell at a very high level, who is Kevin and what do you do?
All right. That's a good question. So I currently work at EdgeConneX. And for those who are unfamiliar, global data center operator, operations across Americas, Europe, Asia, a lot of stuff. And so what I do there is the research function. So I'm doing a lot of market analytics, checking out what markets we should go into, how big, what should we do as far as like clients are concerned, all that kind of stuff. What are our competitors doing? You name it. And I'm doing the digging and I'm trying to come up with analytics on it. A lot of different roles that come as a part of that, working with the sales team, working with the C-suite, you name it, I'm probably doing it. So a lot of speaking appearances at different conferences. I've probably met a lot of you in the audience. I've definitely had some good times with the two gentlemen on this podcast.
So how did you get involved in this whole space? I know, and knowing what I know about you and interacting with you over the years, I do remember that you had a major in economics and business management, if I'm not mistaken. So how does get one from there to being a research analyst and or being in research in the mission critical space?
Well, very clunkily and not directly, as most people in this industry come to, right? So it's funny you mentioned that degree. So I went to UC Santa Cruz, a great place to go to school. I didn't quite know what I was doing. And so I graduated a year early by mistake. And I'm not kidding. I had no idea I was graduating early. So then I was like, oh, shit, I'm in trouble. I don't have a plan. I don't know what to do. So what do I do? So I bounced around a couple of years, tried a few different jobs out. And I was like, no, I'm not really using that degree like you mentioned. And then I happened to stumble upon this company. It was called Real Capital Analytics. And I've never heard of this company. What are they doing? Well, they're tracking the global real estate market at the time. They're tracking everything that sold, everything that got financing. And they were moving from being a US-based company to a fully global-based company. And when they hired me, they're like, well, you have this degree. You seem to understand things about global economics. We need to roll this product out in a year. And we did it. We got it done. It was a mess, but we got it done. And we were very successful. And that company is still going today. They're doing quite well. And they're part of the MSCI group now.
Were they like a purely research company?
Yep. Purely okay. Research. And it was just collecting data on everything that was going on in commercial real estate. And then running analytics on that. Hey, this is what's going on across the world. This sold, this is where we see pricing going, et cetera, et cetera. Well, data centers, okay, how does that come up? Well, data centers were a part of that, right? And at the time when I joined the company, it was like, we knew about office buildings, we knew about like warehouses and shopping centers, that kind of stuff. But it was like, okay, how do we create this data center function? So that started being a part of what I was doing. And so it was tying in, okay, how do we make a product that makes sense where we're actually tracking the market from? And then I moved from there to becoming full-time data center. So I moved over to the brokerage world. I worked for Cushman & Wakefield for several years, and I was doing that research function there. It was producing all our global analysis, telling the markets what's going on and so forth. And after that, we'd go over to EdgeConneX. So it's kind of like this gradual transition over, say, 15-ish years where it was like, okay, data centers were a thing I did. Then they became the thing I did. And then just growing in that role and started to work for more direct companies that were suddenly doing that as their only function.
Usually people that don't know what they're doing tend to take longer to graduate from college. How did you manage to accidentally graduate early? How does that happen?
Well, so this is what I learned, and anybody in college students out there, this is how you actually save money. I had credit without knowing I had credit. So like in high school, I had a buddy who had a car. I didn't have a car at that. And so we ended up going to this junior college in my neighborhood. And really it was an excuse to get out of the house, right? Like, hey, we get to go out at night and like play around because we're going to night school. Well, all that credit I got in night school actually meant something. And I had never really thought about that. It was just like a way to get out of the house. And so once I transferred all that over, I never paid attention to the fact that it took years off my college. It was like, oh, that's good to know. So it ended up saving me a lot of money. It was great. I thought I'd have like another year to plan out what my life was going to be like. And of course I didn't. So
to all the young kids out there, if you want to party at night, just go to night school.
It sounds like
a great place
to party. It was awesome, man. So that it was a happy accident. The other thing I did was, and I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but because I'm really bad at the language now, I took a Japanese class in high school, and that class was taught by another junior college teacher. That counted as college credit too. Again, I had no idea. I was just trying to explore things and find things out. And by doing that, more credit.
I'm just curious now, like how many credits did you get in that you were not aware of? What are we talking, 20 credits? We're talking 40
That's like a
credits?
full year of credits, whatever a full year is.
Yeah, well, it was actually more than a year. It was something like over 2 years, but I didn't have the right credits to graduate in my major.
So there's still some extra credits out there.
Right. You can go back for another degree.
Oh, totally. I graduated with tons of extra credit, as it turned out. It was just weird, really weird.
Well, welcome to America. All right. So, how did you end up picking economics? Was that family influence, brothers, sisters, parents, extended family in that particular segment of the business or subject?
I'll tell you, my dad was like Silicon Valley 1.0. He was building mainframes here in the 70s. He was more electrical engineering and that kind of stuff. So when I told him, hey, I actually kind of just dig these economic classes. Like, I like understanding what's going on across the world, like financial stuff. I don't think he was all that pleased about it because I had told him I was going to be a computer science major. And so it was just like, well, but I like these classes more. This is more interesting. It didn't occur to me. I obviously had no idea. I was going to somehow come back to the tech sector much later and end up working with data centers. But it was just like the hard on like computer science, like software development part. That just wasn't working for me at the time. I was like, man, I don't like this. I need to find something else. And it was just feeling around blindly. I was like, wow, I really like this. This is cool. So I'm going to go that route. And so then eventually things came full circle anyway. So
is that what you wanted to do when you were growing up? Did you, because your father was Silicon Valley 1.0, did you want to gravitate towards engineering? Or was that something you told your father because you knew that was how you were going to get a smile on his face?
No. Like, I didn't know of anything else, right? Like, I spent my whole life in Silicon Valley, right? Like, what else is there? Like, it never occurred to me there were other kinds of jobs, right? Everyone I knew growing up, like, their parents worked in the Valley, like, doing some kind of tech work. There were no other options. We couldn't fathom that, right? Like, oh, there's other things you could do with your life? No. It's like, oh, okay. It took me leaving the house and starting to explore. And I was like, okay, now I can learn stuff.
Did your mom work in the industry as well?
Yep. Yeah. She did too. She had stopped working at that point. But yeah, she worked in the industry as well. So for a good historical perspective, I always use that as a check, like about edge computing and things like that. I talked to my dad about it. He's like, we talked about that decades ago. That's nothing new. Okay, good to know.
See, it comes up all the time. We all think that we're reinventing the wheel, when in reality, we're just reinventing a way to talk about the wheel.
Oh, yeah. It's just marketing, right? Like, we just keep doing the same thing over and over again. It just flip-flops between centralized edge, like, every few years.
I think Kevin just defined insanity. Oh, well.
And edge computing.
We're doing something new, right? Like, right. We're just enjoying
the same shit. So we're doing the same shit. Sure. As a kid, were you into gaming and stuff as a consequence of the desire to be in engineering? Like, what were your hobbies as a child?
Basketball. Despite my small stature, I still played quite a bit. Yeah, a lot of basketball. Finding a lot of outdoor stuff. Hiking. So a lot of the same stuff I do, like hiking, running, that kind of stuff. Those are big hobbies, still are. And then, yeah, I guess it's funny now you mention it. I think I have had the same hobby since I was a young kid, actually. I haven't grown up, basically. Motor racing, I'm a big car racing fan, Formula One, things like that. And typical sports fan. I'm also a big reader. Always want to keep learning and all kinds of topics. So used bookstores are very dangerous to me. I clean them out all the time and pass them on to other people. So definitely a big reader.
So besides that, what's your passion? I mean, in the data center space, is there anything in particular that stands out more than others that you're seeing currently?
Yeah, well, I think obviously sustainability is on all of our minds. Like, we can't avoid that and we shouldn't. We need to consider ways that we can be as sustainable as possible, because otherwise if we cook our planet, we have no industry to have anyway. Just a bit very basic start there and figuring out ways around that. I think also, to me, the two things are totally connected, sustainability and transparency. I think just in the years that I've been in the industry, maybe you guys have an opinion on this too. I think we've tended to be very opaque. We tend not to share information very well. And that's one of the things that I've always tried to do, especially going from sharing data at the very beginning all the way through, is like, how can we become more transparent? Because ultimately, quite honestly, we're all doing quite well right now. This isn't competition. This is like, everyone is doing well as a company, as an entity, and everything else right now because of all the industry is doing. So it's like, how can we collaborate, share information? Ultimately, that's a sign of a mature industry. And the fact that we're not transparent as an industry yet says we have a long way to go until we hit maturity. And I guess that comes from digressing a little bit here, but like I compare the data center industry to some of these geographic markets that I used to study as whole real estate markets. So if you take like a Vietnam or a Thailand as a whole real estate market, well, those are developing and they have a long way to go. And as a result, the incumbents aren't very transparent because they're trying to hold on to that information. In some ways, we're still there in the data center industry, or we have to like loosen up and everyone gets to that point where they realize, oh, okay, we can be transparent. There's plenty of ways to make money here and we're going to be just fine.
So what's the hidden secret? I mean, you talked about markets outside of America and in your experience and being a research person, where do you think is the next big break? Of course, not in the US right now, we're changing computing platforms, but what other markets is the next big break that's going to skip 2 to 3 generations of compute?
Well, let's break it up. Let's go 5-year, 10-year, 15-year, because I think these are different markets on each stage. So 5-year are some of the markets that are already growing, but they have a lot further to go. So Southeast Asia right now, Indonesia is doing quite well. Malaysia is doing quite well. You're seeing markets like Jakarta take off and become primary size. Markets like Kuala Lumpur and Johor are going to be following. So with that being said, you think about how big an Indonesia is, and you think about how many cities are in Indonesia that have basically no data center capacity. It's not all going to go in Jakarta eventually. There are going to be secondary, tertiary cities that develop there. And I mentioned Vietnam and Thailand. Those are countries that have sizable populations, almost no data center capacity. Now, part of that is due to power grid. Like if you're looking at the Vietnam, you're looking at almost 100 million people and maybe 30 megawatts total capacity in the country. Well, that's seriously on data center, and that's got to change. There's just very little power to do it. So you talk about a regional move like that. India has been talked about left, right, and center, but we still have gigawatts, plural gigawatts of capacity to go there to meet population needs as incomes rise. So that to me is the next 5 to 10 year part. South America is another part of that, is where it's like Brazil's up to 300-400 megawatts. I could be wrong there, but off the top of my head, like as a country, it's about there. Still a long way to go to match population size. Mexico, tiny compared to population. So all these places have that growth. After that, we're looking at sub-Saharan Africa in my mind, because when you talk about demographics and growing population and so forth, and a lot of countries that have 40, 50 million people only have sub 10 megawatt capacity. Again, power grid's an issue, but as we see demographics come online, more people using different services, more people getting access to smartphones if they don't have them already, and then using a bunch of different apps. In turn, online shopping begets more companies, begets more cloud needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that's the further flung situations when you have countries like in Nigeria that are going to have 300-400 million people. You have mid-sized countries now, they're still going to grow like a Kenya or a Senegal. Huge possibilities there. You're going to have to take it on the chin as far as some of your infrastructure costs that helping pay for it, but that's where some growth is going to happen.
So besides the consumer access and the consumerization of technology, are there any other driving factors that you are considering or that stand out for you, especially pertaining to data privacy, regulation, compliance, so on and so forth, and even just the cost of doing business?
Yeah, absolutely. There are negatives and positives with that, right? Like we've talked for a long time about India and how the Indian government is thinking about some very tight personal data restrictions. Now, they haven't officially published that and hasn't officially become law, but it keeps getting talked about. Now, if that's the case and you're going to be developing AI in India and it has to stay there, well, why wouldn't you build as big as possible? Because not only are you going to be developing these models to suit the Indian consumer, but you're going to continue to be selling to them for decades from now. And so if that data's got to stay there, then keep developing to accommodate your needs there. And so I think it's not always a bad thing, ironically enough, for the data center industry that things like GDPR get created, because ultimately that just means more data centers have to be localized. Now, does that impede growth around the globe? It might. But for the data center industry, because now we're filling more data centers locally, that ends up working out okay in the long run, oddly enough.
Well, that's the thing, right? The thing is that regardless of whether there's a GDPR restriction or any of those privacy regulations, data needs to be processed, right? So if data can only be processed for certain workloads within the country, that just means more data centers have to be built both inside the country and outside the country. So it's, for better or worse, I suppose, a win-win. Are there any of the reverse elements? Do you see areas that have limited population have access to a lot of power? And does that drive the need? Is it strictly population focused, or is there sometimes the flip side of that argument?
Well, I guess the flip side has happened with all this generative AI development, right? Around LLMs and just needing a lot of power cheap in the middle of nowhere, right? Develop the model and then worry about distribution later.
Which is also a function of Bitcoin, I suppose.
Absolutely. So you're seeing some of those companies switch from Bitcoin to LLM development now because of that very reason. It's like, oh, this LLM stuff's going to work out just as well. And we can use the same equipment. Now, some of the places that some of this is being located at, or some of the places where, like, either I've stumbled upon some power or some of my colleagues have, it's like, okay, let's show this to some possible customers. We have this middle of nowhere location, sizable power, good timeline to power because it's old stranded industrial stuff. Like maybe there was a factory or something like that. All right, let's show it to some customers. Maybe we could do something. What's really interesting is almost no one wants it. And I thought that was an interesting tell because we hear in a lot of meetings like, hey, we want really quick time to power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, here it is right here. It's not in the city you had in mind. And so I think part of that issue, right, is what's the incentive package look like to locate in somebody? Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but those tax incentives that local areas can provide, that's really helpful because it's taken off some of the sales tax costs, some of the property tax costs over 10, 15, 20 years. And then the question is, okay, where are we going to locate people? Because we talk about it all the time as an industry, right? We can't find people. There aren't enough people joining the industry. Well, let's say you go to a very rural area and you have to ship in people from all over. Now your costs start skyrocketing in a hurry because you don't just employ that person at a high salary. You got to move. And you got to get someone who wants to move to the middle.
I totally love that. I'm sorry I have to chime in on this one. This is like the reason why Nomad Futurists and the Foundation and the Academy have been established to address the human capital deficit. So that's the perfect plug there, Kevin. Thank you.
Well, I'm here to help with plug.
It's almost like these questions are leading to a conclusion that we might know.
I think you're ahead of the game, guy. I think this makes sense.
Well, that's all the time we have, guys. That's all I need.
All right. So, Kevin, you've been focusing a fair amount of your time in research, right? So we seem to get a bad reputation out there, being in the data center space, that we are energy hogs. And we continuously hear about...
That's because we are energy hogs.
Yeah, but when you look at the total global energy usage, we are sub 1.5%. Of course, there's a lot of areas that can be improved and that should be improved. We need to regulate it more. We need to improve our efficiency ratios and our utilization metrics. How do you see and or address that challenge for somebody that's not in the space? And the fact that we're not going to go back in time and handwrite letters, that's gone. That culture, that era is over. We are living in the digital world now, and that's really the future. So how do we create that level of understanding for an average person that we are not bad for the society, for the community, and or for the planet for that matter?
Well, it's got to be a multi-pronged approach. And this is something that we're doing well as an industry on some parts right now, but I don't think we're doing well at other parts at all. And so one of the things we're good at is we're talking about a lot of times we're using this much renewable energy, or we're doing offsets, we're doing any number of those things to help the big builds, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things I always think needs to be brought up is for those enterprises that have not moved to the cloud, some of those data centers, I don't want to throw anyone out in particular, but some of those data centers are not very professionally run as it turns. And their PUEs and the energy that they're using is kind of off the charts. And I've seen some of this. I've had direct encounters in some of this. So I think that needs to be talked about is how we're using a lot of power, but at a much more efficient basis than how it has been. And with the increases in technology, the increases in efficiency with some of what we're doing around cooling and so forth, that's going to make a big difference going forward. We're not going to have mismanaged data centers anymore, where the data center is sort of an afterthought to the rest of corporate aspirations or operations. This is front and center, the only thing that we do as an industry. And as everyone who's still a straggler moves to the cloud, that's going to be very helpful. Now, I think the other thing we need to do is we need to be more involved in communities in general. So we're not just this strange thing that shows up one day and builds an ugly building. And I think there are any number of programs that we can do, which are honestly quite simple. As far as speaking with community members, having people understand what we are and how we're doing it or what we're doing. And this might sound like the most basic thing in the world, right? Just going up and talking to people at community meetings, but we don't do it as an industry. We straight up do not do this very well. And there's no reason why we can't do it. Like, are we afraid to talk to people? Are we afraid to educate people? We shouldn't be. I think we have a very good value proposition. But something this similar as far as like community cleanup events, as far as community meeting events, Like, why can't we all spend more time doing this? You guys are already doing it with some of your education programs. And I think that's going to be very helpful. But I think all of us need to do this as, and become ambassadors. Because otherwise, if there's no communication and you have no knowledge of technology or the industry and you just see this thing getting constructed, you can think all kinds of weird things. And so some of the NIMBYism that comes out of this, it's understandable because we didn't communicate. So how do we communicate? That's a big thing on my mind.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, look, one of the things we saw, we were at DCD in Northern Virginia. Was it last year, 6 months ago? I don't know, the last 5 years or so are a blur to me. But Bill Clayman had coordinated this panel with some of the folks that were protesting data center developments in Loudoun County. And it was one of the only forums that I had seen where you actually got the protesters that are not involved in our industry in a room with people sharing their opinions about what their trepidations are. And they're real. It's not like they're completely made up. They have a concern that resources that are going to data centers are going to impact their ability or priorities associated with their residential development. And there is a finite set of resources. And I think as an industry, we've been head down growing for so long that it just wasn't prioritized to involve the community, because then you'd have to explain what you're doing. And that takes work and effort, and they're not going to understand it anyway. So why even bother?
Then the transparency thing again, right?
No doubt.
That's got to be a part of this in the back of some people's minds.
Right. And I think the more we kind of, what we're trying to do is we're trying to expose our industry to a number of demographics. Our focus initially has been this K through 12, like get kids understanding what our industry at an early age, in order for them to see themselves in our industry, to make it a potential career. But one of the offshoots of that is us educating the educators and the administrators. And those educators and administrators and adults and parents of these kids are the ones that sit on community boards. And once they start seeing these data centers are not only beneficial because, you know, it's what drives a significant portion of their personal and professional lives, it's certainly what's occupying and in many cases parenting their children when they're staring at Roblox or Minecraft or Fortnite or whatever. But it's also what future careers are going to be based on, right? So if they see like this is a potential career path for my child, so things are moving in this direction, so let's get involved. Let's figure out how we can work together. There's a light bulb moment that comes on both sides. And it sounds like you've seen the same things. No doubt, as you do research in more emerging markets, there's going to be a similar push-pull. We need local demographics in order to participate in the eventual development and success of these deployments.
Well, this is increasing, right? It's not going to be a decreasing problem. It's going to be an increasing problem. Because as we keep building bigger and bigger and more markets and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there are more people to educate.
Absolutely. And they're the users of it all as well, right? You can't really start a riot because you got to make that phone call or send a text message or send an email, right? You need technology for it. So yeah, having an open mind and the desire to educate and be educated is important.
Let's create a Facebook group to shut down the internet.
Someone will try it. Someone will try it.
Absolutely. All right. So you had mentioned community engagement, and you and I have had several conversations over the last few weeks pertaining to cleanup as well. Could you share your thoughts and talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So this specific initiative was something that a couple of colleagues brought to my attention, and it was, again, simplest thing in the world, made all the sense in the world. So those colleagues will, they'll be on probably my podcast, maybe yours very soon. We'll talk about some more. Laura Reyes, Elizabeth Johnson, they tend to be not the most upfront forward people for the company, but it was just a conversation we had where it was just like, why don't we go pick up trash in our areas? Like, wouldn't that be a visible help that we're doing? We're not only helping, we're showing that we want to help because we're outside the data center and we're actually doing things in the community, for example. And so in April, end of April, we'll be doing that. And so across our corporate offices, but hopefully throughout the entire industry, as we start to circulate the press around that, we're going to be inviting everyone in the industry and everyone. If you're in one of the markets that I'm in or my company's in or that Nomad Futurist is in, come along and we're going to be setting up events. If you're not, well, there's a bunch of partnerships that we're going to be publishing that you can do this in your local. And I think if we have a great turnout and we make this an annual thing, which ideally we'll be able to do, this is the kind of impact we can have on communities where we're showing that we want to get. And again, it's a simple thing that just takes our time and effort, and it shouldn't be a problem for any of us to do this. And I think it's an idea I really enjoy, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm glad that two of my colleagues came up with this idea.
Yeah, and we look forward to supporting you guys with the cleanup. I think I talk about it all the time that we've got to stay relevant, and that's only done by our actions and to stay in front of people as well. So thank you for taking the leadership on it.
No doubt. And one of the things, it's one of our core missions as well. You have to put together this concept of us being these large windowless buildings that don't have any people that are ghost ships with the fact that we are an industry that's driven by humans. We're in the same communities. We did an event in California where the light bulb moment that happened for the kids wasn't the blinky lights or the cool tech. All of that was great. But seeing someone from their own communities that worked in the data center, that made it like contextualized it and made it accessible. So it's just the humanization of our industry is one that I don't think we predicted would be an issue, because I guess you just assume that humans are the ones that are doing all these things. But we are so good at what we do that nobody actually knows that a data center exists until TikTok doesn't work or Facebook is down or whatever. So getting out there and being amongst the community is the lowest hanging fruit that we can do. So it's a great initiative, no doubt.
Yeah. And again, I think sometimes because like you mentioned, we are good at what we do. We always try to think in terms of, okay, how do we remove our entire carbon footprint from the atmosphere? Not saying that's not important. Good thought process. Something we can work on. But we can also do really simple things that make it really easy and that are accessible to anyone. And so I think that's the thing we always need to remember too.
Now, you mentioned earlier in the conversation that you were born in the Web 1.0 or Data Center 1.0 era, right?
Yes, sir.
Many science fiction movies present a dark vision of the future. And people like Musk are not really big advocates of AI, yet they're promoting that. It's a part of his business unit and that autonomous lifestyle, so and so. Now, as far as Kevin is concerned, is Kevin optimistic or pessimistic about the future of humanity with everything that's going around?
Recent events that are not tech related have led me to have those little minutes, I'll be honest, little slow moments of pessimism with some of the violence going on in the world right now. But I think I'm trying to be optimistic because I think technology is a force for good. I still do believe that. But part of the reason I believe that is because the amount of effort to develop this technology and the amount of cost to develop this technology means that for someone to use it for malign purposes, in my mind, is going to be extremely, extremely difficult because there are so many positive forces through corporate business, through government, through any number of community organizations who are going to use this technology that are going to use it for positive ends. And I think ultimately the positive outweighs the negative. Are there going to be malefactors? Yes, just like there are now. That's why we have cybersecurity. Any number of these problems still be there. There may be occasional blips, but overall, I think it's a good bet on humanity. I forget which writer said this, but there's a quote I think of quite often where it's like humanity lurches along. It comes sometimes lumpy, sometimes comes in chunks, but we get by. We figure out ways to get ahead. And overwhelmingly, if humanity was malign, we still wouldn't be here, but we're here and we're accentuating our positives and we're going to get to where we need to get to. And I think AI is going to be symbolic of that. Is it going to completely change our lives immediately? In my mind, no. It's going to be a graduated change and it's going to continue to help. Like it's going to be there. It's going to be there as a positive. But in my mind, I don't see it being this immediate revolution. I think it's going to be a slow growth thing where it's like gets integrated into our lives more and more. It's like, okay, this is working pretty well.
Yeah, and we just have to stop the bad actors along the way. And it comes by making sure that we are in front and relevant. That comes by making sure that we continue to preach this message and educating people that there is a better way of doing it.
There's no doubt that one of the biggest issues that would create the kind of negative influences is not shining a light on these technologies, right? You don't want to hide. If you hide them, it's a real issue. Then you have Tom Cruise saying all sorts of weird things because the deep fakes and all that stuff. But if you make sure that everyone is kind of aware, and you can't really do that without like a concerted effort. So it takes effort to make sure that we can, as a society, balance the power that comes with these technologies with the potential of them to do good things and bad things.
I think Tom Cruise made that whole thing up. He just wanted to listen.
It's totally possible. It's totally possible.
So, Kevin, how do you keep up with all the tech stuff? There's constant evolution. Things are changing every day. There's something new every day. As a research individual, how do you keep up with everything?
Well, you have to. This is going to sound very trite, but I think this is the same thing that makes any good researcher. When I used to hire a lot of researchers in the past, this is the one thing that made someone good is it's not even technical skill. It's not even knowledge. It's just honestly being curious more than anything. You have to want to know things. You have to want to get answers and be curious and genuinely believe in that. So coming from that, though, means it's a lot of work. So every time someone reaches out to me, I take the meeting. Oh, you have a new technology you want to discuss? You have a new property you want to discuss? You have anything you want to discuss? Let's discuss it, because I'm probably going to learn something and maybe I can help you out. I don't know what it's going to be, but maybe there's something. We can at least make the connection. Every news feed I can get on, every data feed I can get on, I get on it. Like, what things can I pull out of every one of these things? Again, a lot of freaking work here. There's a lot that goes into this, but it's one of those things where if you want to get better and you want to learn, it's going to make you better, because you're going to be forced with all this information coming in that's going to take on your presuppositions. You're going to say, oh, wait, I thought it was this. Now it's not. And you have to put that away and be willing to pivot to what the situation actually is. And so I think just being able to constantly take that in, digest it, figure out ways that you can utilize this information and then disseminate it in a way, condense it and talk about it to the community, be able to analyze it for your business or for the community's sake or for your own sake. That's all part of the puzzle. So it's just one of those things that I think in my mind, it's like a lifelong process of like constantly refining and making yourself better. You make yourself better by learning all the time and then figuring out ways to use that information in a more timely manner.
What's amazing about you in particular is that it wasn't necessarily the technology that drove you. It was kind of you found your lane that allowed your work as an analyst to dovetail with the things that you're curious about naturally. So your interest kind of led you to this lane within the industry that allowed you to manifest that curiosity with success. So if you were talking to the young Kevin that was nervous about telling his dad that he wasn't actually interested in engineering or computer science, but he was interested in economics, what would you tell that kid scared to tell his dad?
I think one of those things that humanity, or I guess evolution, has given you is what's really good for you, right? Like, I think it's in there. Now, you deny it to yourself a lot of times because sometimes it's going to lead to hard work, or it's going to lead to uncomfortable truths that you have to confront people with, but you know what you want. And just being honest with yourself is really important. And I think there are a lot of people over the years who have given me good meeting advice. And I listened, I took it in, and I was like, that's not really what I feel like. You know, I know they meant well, but I was like, I got to think for myself here. And it turned out I was right in those cases, because what they were suggesting was wonderful because it worked for them, but it wasn't going to work for me. And that's what I think you also always have to balance everything by and be able to think for yourself. It's like, again, I don't think that anyone's a bad actor. You just have to figure out what works for you and what you're comfortable with, and take everything you're told, listen, and then make your decision correctly as far as what you want.
That's actually one of the best advice I've ever heard. You know what you want. You just have to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. This has been absolutely phenomenal. Great to get to know you, and I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Likewise. We'll be meeting up in all kinds of conferences, I'm sure. So thank you both.
Totally looking forward to it. And it was great. And I'll just tell you this to end with. You're a lot more interesting than you thought.
As long as you guys think so, that's all I'm doing. Thank you.
This has been great. Nothing lasts forever. Markets will come back. Currencies will rebound. Businesses will go on. And we will all move on. That could happen next week, next month, or next year. At Nomad Futurists, we're confident that those who prepare rather than panic will come out of this stronger. Thank you for joining us. This has been brought to you by Nomad Futurist. Check us online at nomadfuturist.org. And thank you for listening and subscribing, as well as your continued support.